Offside. Ukrajinska umetnost dogovora. Prejšnjo sredo sta ameriški finančni minister Scott Bessent in ukrajinska gospodarska ministrica ter podpredsednica vlade Julija Sviridenko v Washingtonu podpisala sporazum o redkih zemljah in kritičnih rudninah. Sporazumom državi ustanavljata skupni sklad, preko katerega bosta delili dohodek od izkoriščanja ukrajinskih naravnih virov. To vključuje rudna bogatstva ter nafto in zemeljski plin. V tako imenovani sklad za obnovo in investicije bo Ukrajina primorana prispevati 50% dohodka od novih licenc za pridobivanje z dogovorom določenih surovin. Vladi sta tako po 2 mesecih nadaljnjih pogajanj končno sprejeli dogovor, ki ga je ameriški predsednik Donald Trump zahteval že februarja, vendar je ukrajinski predsednik Volodimir Zelenski od podpisa odstopil prav na predvideni dan sklenitve sporazuma. Določbe dejansko podpisane različice sporazuma so za Ukrajino veliko milejše kot sporazum, ki ga je Zelenski dobra 2 meseca prej skoraj podpisal. Novo dogovorjeni sporazum se nanaša samo na nove licence. Ukrajini tako v sklad ne bo treba vplačevati prihodkov od že začetih ali v sklopu državnega proračuna načrtovanih projektov. Nahajališča ostajajo v ukrajinski državni lasti, prav tako sporazum ne vključuje nobenih zahtev po privatizaciji rudarskih, naftnih in energetskih podjetij. Razlike med prvo in dokončno različico sporazuma predstavi Ben Eris, urednik portala BNI Intellinews.
Original deal, Trump was demanding that they take the existing revenues from raw materials, specifically the oil and gas that Ukraine produces. And it does produce about 20 billion cubic meters of gas already, and it produces some oil already. And they wanted to have that revenue being put into the fund. But again, Bankov has managed to cut that out because, I mean, that's Ukraine's budgetary lifeblood. That's the money it runs the country on. And if it was to give up control over that, then the country would just not be viable. Enough tax revenue to be able to pay for anything. So the terms are very good. The American companies get first dibs. If there's any development, any project, any mining project, the Americans have their right of first refusal to do that project. And then if they do it, then half the revenue it generates goes into the fund, which the Americans can take out the money from that fund in order to pay for their arms and whatever else is they deem that the costs are for continuing to support Ukraine. But it doesn't cut into the existing flows of money, which is significant, and all the existing stuff already exists, it's already working. So in effect, although the terms on paper are very attractive, in practice, none of this exists until the investment comes, which, as I said, we're not anticipating to come for years and years. So the whole thing, if you ask me, is symbolic. That Americans won't make any money out of this for a decade. Ukrainians won't lose anything from this. They've kept control over the key things like their own Naftogaz and Ukrenergo and all the other key producers of energy that they have. And they haven't signed away control.
Sporazum govori o redkih zemljah in kritičnih rudninah. Ukrajina ima zaloge tako imenovanih kritičnih surovin, kot so litij, titan in grafit, ter nahajališča nafte, zemeljskega plina in oglja. Redkih zemelj, ki se uporabljajo v visoki tehnologiji, je na ukrajinskem ozemlju v resnici zelo malo. Kot pojasnjuje sogovorec, so trditve o ukrajinskih virih redkih zemelj neosnovane in plod špekulacij, ki izvirajo iz poročila NATO-vega centra odličnosti za energetsko varnost v Litvi.
Ukraine has no rare earth metals at all. I mean, other than trace elements in the soil like everybody has. There are no deposits, significant commercially viable deposits of rare earth metals. Rare earth metals are a group of 17 metals, lanthium metals. They're very specific. And they're used in high tech, in permanent magnets. They're very useful. What Ukraine does have is critical minerals. And the problem with the reporting of this has been a lot of confusion, where people, you know, they don't remember their chemistry. I mean, I didn't even study rare earth metals when I studied chemistry at school. And they're confusing things like beryllium, lithium, graphite, which are critical minerals, but they're not rare earth minerals. And what Ukraine has is significant deposits of some of these critical minerals. It has something like 22 of the 31 critical minerals that the EU needs. Lithium in particular, it has big deposits of that. It has titanium, which is used in airplane manufacturing. It has some beryllium that's extractable, graphite. It has significant deposits. It has aluminium bauxite. It has coal, but it doesn't have rare earth minerals. And what happened here was, as far as we can work out, it goes back to a report that was issued by a Lithuanian think tank that wrote that Ukraine has, quote, trillions of dollars of rare earth minerals, end quote, and then went on to list a whole bunch of minerals like beryllium, lithium, which are not rare earth minerals. They made the mistake originally. And then this report seems to have been picked up by Senator Lindsey Graham, who went on TV in November and started talking about the trillions of dollars of mineral riches in Ukraine and that we should do a deal. And then Trump picked that up. And then the whole mineral deal thing started.
Rudniki na nahajališčih večine teh surovin še ne obstajajo in po mnenju sogovornika sklad tako še vsaj desetletje ne bo prinašal dobička.
All these minerals are just basically dirt in the ground. And that in order to get any money out of them, to produce these minerals, you're going to need to spend hundreds of millions, if not tens of billions, in building the mines. And then on top of that, you have to build the processing plants. And we're at least a decade away from the states being able to make any money out of these mineral deposits at all. And who's coming? I mean, presumably, it's going to be private American companies that are going to come in and set these mines up. But, you know, Ukraine's still at war. The investors I've talked to said, look, yeah, Ukraine is a great story. It has great natural resources in all sorts of sectors. But I wouldn't invest in there now. I wouldn't invest in there if there was a ceasefire tomorrow. I would wait at least 5 years to see what happens, to see if there's going to be any likelihood of a second war. And then I might start tentatively investing. So the prospect of raising hundreds, if millions of dollars to build, you know, mines, it's not going to happen soon. So this means we're something like 10 or 20 years away. So it remains more symbolic, political than anything else. Ukrainians know, I mean, they sign away the rights to these minerals, which they're not developing anyway, in any way, shape or form. And with the promise that American firms will come in and make massive investments into all of this mines and technology that goes with it, which would be a great thing for Ukraine. It desperately needs that kind of investment. So from that perspective, it's actually a good deal. But as I say, at the moment, it's pretty meaningless and will be pretty meaningless for years to come.
Kot smo omenili, sta vladi sklenitev sporazuma načrtovali že konec februarja, vendar sta se Zelenski in Trump na predvideni dan podpisa med novinarsko konferenco sprla. Srečanje v Washingtonu pa je Zelenski predčasno zapustil. Trump je zahteve Zelenskega po ameriških varnostnih zagotovilih zavrnil, čez da sta poslovni dogovor in rusko spoštovanje do njega osebno zadostni zagotovili za mir. Zelenskega je nato obtožil izzivanja tretje svetovne vojne in nehvaležnosti ter dejal, da bi Ukrajina vojno brez ameriške pomoči že zdavnaj izgubila. Čez nekaj dni je Trump ukazal ustavitev vse vojaške pomoči Ukrajini. Sledilo je nadaljevanje pogajanj za premirje z Rusijo, ki jih povzema Eris.
Deal that the Americans, 7-point deal that the Americans put on the table in London, whenever that was, 10 days ago, conceded Crimea's sovereignty to Russia. It conceded lifting the sanctions, including those that were imposed in not just in 2022, but in 2014. And Zelensky, this was unacceptable. So he turned that down and came back with, let's do the 30-day ceasefire and direct talks. And then Zelensky and Putin would sit down and go through the details. And I think Zelensky's position would be that, look, he's willing to concede de facto that the Russians control the four regions and Crimea. He won't concede at all de jure sovereignty over any of those. And the Russians were suggesting that they would take sovereignty over Crimea, but they did suggest that they would not insist on sovereignty over the annexed region. So there was a bit of middle ground. However, Putin, if he doesn't do this deal, if he doesn't get concessions from Trump, then he's locked into a situation where those sanctions will stay on for decades, if not generations, and he's just going to have to live with it, with poor relations with the whole of the West. And this is his one opportunity to normalize or start to bring back relations between East and West, to restart trade.
Trump je dogovor sprva zahteval kot poplačilo za ameriško vojaško pomoč Ukrajini. Novi dogovor ne omenja nobenega dolga Združenim državam za pretekla tri leta orožarskih pošiljk in usposabljanj ukrajinskih vojakov, ampak govori le o prihodni vojaški pomoči.
That's been watered down. The White House has backed off. One of the problems was that the aid that the Americans gave under Biden very generously was in the form of grants and not loans. And the thing with grants is that they're gifts. You don't have to pay them back. And Trump was saying that all this money, however much, $350, was debt, loans that Ukraine had to repay, which you can challenge legally because it wasn't. And as I say, the Americans have backed off from making these claims. And as far as I know, under the terms of the new agreement, they've dropped that demand. And the new deal is that all of the arms that, if any, but the arms that are being shipped to Ukraine now will be considered commercial deals. In other words, Ukraine is not going to get any more gifts of weapons. It's going to have to pay for them. But Zelensky himself said he hasn't got a problem with that. He proposed to Trump that they do a longstanding big $50 billion arms supply deal with the States, and they would buy all of the arms they need going forward. But Trump rejected that. But the revenue that's supposed to be generated out of the fund they've set up as part of the minerals deal has to go to pay for new weapons. And so from that perspective, Vankova, the Ukrainian president's administration, has cut a very good deal. And they're quite happy to pay cash for arms.
To nadaljno vojaško pomoč bo ukrajinska vlada po mnenju sogovorca sposobna odplačati.
They're assuming that they're going to be able to get the money from their European partners, which is probably true. I mean, you know, from the money point of view, that the reserves that Ukraine had were down to about $25 billion, which wasn't quite enough to cover 3 months worth of imports, which is what the economists say you need as a minimum to keep the currency stable. But Biden, on his way out, managed to rush through a whole bunch of grants and arms packages. And the reserves now are up at $54 billion, which is enough to pay for all of this year, rest of next year, cover the budget, cover the military budget, social spending. So Ukraine has money. And the European Union is now working to try and set into place some sort of mechanism to sustain Ukraine's economy going forward. Partly using the frozen central bank funds.
Končni dogovor še vedno ne vključuje varnostnih zagotovil, ki jih je od ameriške vlade zahteval Zelenski in ki so bile del spora, zaradi katerega do podpisa v prvem poskusu ni prišlo.
The other part of the deal that Zelensky was insisting on from the beginning, I mean, when he was talking about his victory plan in December, when he first started trying to get everyone on board, was security guarantees. And by that, again, he's about a guarantee. What he got so far from all his European partners has been security, quote-unquote, assurances. And all that means is they promised to give him money, they promised to supply weapons, but he's talking about NATO-like Article 5 guarantees, which means that if Russia attacks for a second time, Brits, French, Danish, whoever, will commit troops to Ukrainian soil and fight shoulder to shoulder with Ukrainian soldiers against Russians. And the problem is nobody's prepared to give him a guarantee like that. And this mineral deal is in lieu. So when they asked the states for some sort of guarantee, Trump's argument was, look, if we have American firms with mining operations in Ukraine, nobody will attack Ukraine because they would destroy American factories, kill America. That would be bad, in so much as he's suggesting that the Americans might respond militarily, which they might do, but it's not the same as being a NATO member. It's not having locked-in military support guarantee. So Ukrainians seem to have compromised on that. They weren't really given a choice, but, you know, it improves the situation somewhat.
Kakšen je glede na vse opisano pomen dogovora za ameriško in ukrajinsko stran, opiše sogovorec.
For Trump, it was important for the PR because he sees himself as the world's greatest deal maker. He literally sees himself like that. And the sell to the American public was, we've spent what he said was $350 billion on supporting Ukraine. Again, that was wrong. It was only $90 billion. Nevertheless, he was saying, look, we're going to do this deal with Ukraine. We spent all this money on supporting them, and we're going to do this great mineral deal and get all our money back plus a nice profit. And that fits with his image. For Ukraine, it was important to do the deal, and they kind of kept quiet about the fact that they don't have any rare earths. And what they do have in critical is worth, we calculated, about $800 billion. So it's not insignificant. And these things, particularly lithium, which is used in car and EV car batteries, is important. So there is something worth doing there. But I should point out that Ukraine itself has developed none of these minerals. It produces, you know, minuscule amounts. So it's about $200 million worth of exports of unprocessed minerals like lithium slurry, which are then sent elsewhere to places like China to be processed. But for with the White House, it was a way of keeping them on board. It was a way of earning some goodwill. In order for Ukraine to keep that relationship, because it still relies on the states for several essential things in the military campaign, one of those being powerful long-range missiles, another being the access to the satellite intelligence, which is key. And both those things the Americans control, and both those things that the Europeans would struggle to provide. And so for this sense, the relationship with the states for the Ukrainians is very important.
Do končnega dogovora je prišlo po srečanju med Zelenskim in Trumpom na pogrebu papeža Frančiška. Za konec sogovorec dogovor ocenjuje kot ugoden za Ukrajino v gospodarskem smislu, vendar tudi kot oviro za nadaljna pogajanja z rusko vlado o končanju vojne.
So I think Bankov has actually done a really good deal. It's a symbolic deal that keeps Trump happy, keeps him on board. And again, the meeting that Trump and Zelensky had in the Vatican at the Pope's funeral last weekend seems to have been key. Trump has definitely softened on Ukraine and agreed to this mineral deal, which appeared a few days later. And he's hardened on Russia. He's now talking about new sanctions. He's complaining that the Russians are being the stick in the mud. Because Putin was playing these games. He had the Easter ceasefire for 30 hours. Then he's just proposed a three-day ceasefire for the Victory Day, May 9th. And then with that, he was trying to paint Ukraine in a bad light, that they were being the ones who were being difficult about reaching a ceasefire. But now Zelensky seems to have successfully turned that around and got Trump on his side and painting the Russians in a bad light, which is why I think the whole negotiations are starting to fail, and that a deal with the Russians won't be agreed because Putin stuck his heels in. He wants these concessions. He wants sovereignty over the Crimea. He wants sanctions to be lifted. He specifically talked about lifting the financial sanctions, and none of that's going to happen. So, as I say, I think Putin is in a position where he's prepared to walk away and just make his life a new life with the global south and do without Europe. I think we've gone a long way down the road. I actually think at this point the talks are going to collapse and the war will continue. But then that's another conversation, like, can Ukraine continue to fight for... There is a last important point, that if the talks do collapse, then Ukraine's going to be forced in a position where it's going to have to continue, and that without significant American aid, missiles in particular, it could well lose the war in the next 6 months.
Offsajd sta pripravila vajenka Izabela in Matej.